you there! Welcome to Freaks and Creeks, a Dawson's Creek podcast, the show where four millennials who missed the boat 25 years ago take the dive for the first time. Join us as we experience the series with a fresh perspective and see if our adolescent experiences match up with Dawson and the gang. My name is Cody.
I'm Stella.
I'm Mallory.
And I'm James. And this week we are talking about Season 2, Episode 19, Rest in Peace. Or Rest in Piss, as I like to say.
Oh! Also, it's weird with this title because on every other different website I see, it's called Abby Morgan Rest in Peace or Rest in Peace or R.I.P. Abby or Abby Gone Done Did Dead.
They just can't decide how they wanted to title this one, I guess.
She's dead.
Bucket be kicked.
It kind of reminds me of Season 1, how they had... Remember when Season 1 had movie titles as the episode?
Yeah.
But
then all titles,
some other ones had the alternate titles, which were like not movie related and more in line with how they titled Season 2. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, they don't know what's going on.
No, they don't.
They? Who's they?
The powers that be.
Oh. Mr. Dawson.
Mr. Dawson Leary. Well, before we talk about this wonderful episode, I believe we have something that Stella wants to say.
We have the tiniest little bit of Cape Side correspondence.
Oof. Let's do a mournful Cape Side correspondence intro. Bong, bong, bong.
All right, we got a comment on the Instagram.
Hey, that's something.
In response to the memes that were posted about this episode from Hot Capicola.
Ooh, love that.
They say, who will replace Abby as the Cape Side criticizer? Great question. Ooh, great question.
Yeah.
I replied saying Pacey's dad. I want to see him just start hanging out with the kids, just being mean as fuck.
That would be really cool if he was just like Steve Buscemi in that show. And he's just like, hey, fellow teenagers.
What? Jack and Andy's dad.
Yeah. Well, he's definitely a critic.
I mean, Jen is going through something, so I could see her
picking up those pieces.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sorry, Stella. No.
I don't know. Maybe there will be a new character introduced.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting close to a new season, so...
God, can you imagine? Maybe. I mean, like, this does happen all the time in TV where a character had to leave because the actor was busy and they just, like, replace him with clearly it's just, like, the same character.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's like Abby, but 2.0. With one B and two E's.
I'm Deborah. I am sassy and mean.
My parents are also totally normal.
I'm bored.
I feel like it's going to be Miss Parker. Because she's already a critic.
Miss Parker.
Isn't that her name? Nicole Parker?
Nope.
Nicole Kennedy.
Nicole Kennedy.
Close. Nicole Parker. Same thing, though.
Is a podcaster. Sorry.
Peter Parker is Spider-Man.
I think it's going to be Peter Parker. He's going to fly in on a web.
Hey, I'm swinging here.
Been a while. Got there. Yeah. I don't know. It's sad to see Abby go.
Hate
in a weird way.
See her go.
Love.
To watch her
drown.
Die.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's not a lot of contenders.
No. Mm-mm. Everybody is too mealy-mouthed and weak, spineless.
Yeah. I mean, we're about to get into season 3, so I wouldn't be surprised if we got a new character. But
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. What if, I almost said this in the last episode, but I feel like Abby actually isn't dead. She's in witness protection, and she's just going to come back next season.
That'd be fun.
So
that's pretty cool. What a fake death she was able to make. So it was someone was underwater with like a little,
exactly.
And they had to make like a fake body for that man to zip up in that bag.
Exactly. That's why it looks nothing like her. Well,
she does
all
show
dirty.
Up in her bedroom, so she must be hiding under the bed.
She probably went back to get her diaries and then saw Andy there and then had to like jump under the bed.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Andy's not crazy.
Nope.
No.
Never.
Not at all.
Well, that's all I got.
The PSYOP.
So...
Thanks, guys.
False flag.
Yeah, thanks for nothing.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Thank you, Instagram user Hot Capicola.
All right.
Well, let's get into it.
Yeah.
So once again, this week we are talking about season 2, episode 19, Rest in Peace, Abby Morgan, Rest in Peace. Rest in Peace, Abby Morgan, RIP, etc. Just as it forces Joey to confront her own mother's death, Abby's drowning causes Jen to lose her faith in everything. And this episode aired on May 5th, 1999. Wow. written by Mike White, directed by David Semel.
Mike White.
Friends. Our friends.
Our friend.
Yes. I love Mike White, and I usually think he can do no wrong. And I think this episode is no exception to that. Not to throw this out early, but I think he did a pretty good job on this episode.
I liked this episode a lot.
Yeah.
I did as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, we're done.
I think it's a solid one.
All right, well, that was Freaks and Creeks.
Good deep dive.
We can talk about this later. I'm trying to pull up this article I had read earlier. But I'm pretty sure this article that I read, it was like an old AV Club review for the Perfect Wedding episode and the RIP episode. And it said that this was the last two episodes that Mike White directed. So
wrote.
Yeah. So
that would be sad.
Yeah. So maybe we can talk about that a little bit later.
They really do. I mean, I know we've already talked about this, but it really does seem like they just are like getting rid of everybody that was a part of season two in the writer's room for season three, because we know Kevin Williamson's gone. Now it sounds like Mike White is gone. I know Dana Barada basically like takes over for Kevin Williamson as like the lead showrunner. So I think David Semel also kind of becomes more prominent in the show in season three and beyond, but feels like they're just like cleaning house.
It happens. It sucks. I mean, if they didn't, The Simpsons would still be good, but we're at now.
Yeah. Well, I think on this mournful note, Cody.
Death. It's inescapable and comes for us all. It's the only absolute truth in the human experience. It could happen to you today, tomorrow, or 50 years from now. For Abby Morgan, it happened when she got drunk, bonked her head against a pier pole, and fell to her watery grave. Capeside's reaction, expected. The school brings in some grief counselors to help the kids with the mourning process. But here comes the hypocrisy. Almost everyone is pretending that Abby is a sweet girl when in fact she was kind of a piece of shit. And Jen is pissed. How can you honor a person's legacy when their legacy is a big pile of shit? Grief is hard, but complex grief is even harder. Jen spirals from here on out, recognizing Abby's passy as evidence that there is no Christian God. She drinks herself into a stupor and even gets into it with Grams on the subject, who refuses to engage in a Christian ideological debate. Even worse, Jen goes on to blame Andy to her face that it's her fault for kicking them out during the wedding. Ouch! And speaking of which, Andy is straight up having a bad time. While Pacey tries to console her by reminding her that Abby was a piece of shit, Andy can't shake off old wounds reopening. As if it couldn't get any worse, Abby's mom asks her to eulogize Abby at the funeral. Yeesh. She does some reconnaissance work in Abby's bedroom, trying to find some semblance of a sweet baby angel, but only finds Abby's diary that talks shit about everyone. Man, Abby was the worst. Her death strikes a chord with Joey, too, who unsurprisingly has never truly healed from her mother's passing. JoJo doesn't think she'll attend the funeral because it's too triggering. She still believes that maybe one day God will realize he made a mistake and give her mom back. Sad. When expressing how her mommy memories are beginning to fade to Papa P, he reassures her that mom is alive and well through Joey, as they're almost one and the same. How sweet. Dawson, on the other hand, doesn't really give a fuck about Abby. To be frank, she kind of sucked and he's over it. But don't worry, folks. Our titular hero is going through his own trials and tribulations. Mrs. Manmeet has some big news for our boy. She's learned that her dream job is right there and it's available for her. But unfortunately, it's going to take her all the way to Philadelphia. If she takes it, that surely spells the end of any hope that the Manmeets will together be one Manmeet as well. So as for Mr. Manmeet's reaction, a stoic, good for her. I imagine there will be more to come. At the funeral, Jen hits the pulpit and gives a speech for the ages. She details how Abby was a straight-up asshole and her death is evidence of God's sadistic cruelty, if he even exists. But don't worry, folks. That was just the opener. Andy, the headliner, turns things around with a speech about how sometimes the most challenging people in our lives are the most important, as they make us stronger individuals. That's nice, I guess. The post-funeral vibes hit different, y'all. Joey reassures Dawson regarding the recent romantic rekindling with a smooch. before hitting her mom's grave. Looks like JoJo is growing up big time. Jen is feeling some immense regret over how she reacted to Abby's death and even tells Andy that she now blames herself. When she goes home, she gets an earful from Grams about how her anti-God funeral speech was just to get under her skin, and with that, kicks Jen out of the house. And Andy, realizing she doesn't want Abby's parents to ever find Abby's diary, goes back to her room to snatch them up. But uh-oh, guys, when Andy looks in the mirror, for a split second, she sees Abby standing directly behind her. When Andy turns to see if it's actually there, Abby is nowhere to be seen. End of episode.
Ooh. Honestly, that part actually scared me.
Oh, yes.
I was like, ah! Yeah.
It was eerie.
Yeah.
It was very eerie. And Abby just had that, she was just smiling and it was so fucking creepy.
Yeah.
It's a spooky thing for sure. Oh, so I got some questions. When you first saw this happen, I know we've been joking on the show for two seasons now that there's some paranormal stuff happening in Capeside. What was your instant reaction? Do you think that she was actually seeing a ghost? Were you worried that she was having a mental break? What was going on?
I honestly was so just shocked by it happening. And I immediately, I'll be honest, I was like, I fucking told you guys, I am right. The more I thought about it, the more I was like, wait, what? And I started to kind of come around to, well, it can't be a ghost. So what else could it be? I don't know. What did you guys think?
It was like a combination of her, like I kind of was like, oh, she's hallucinating or she thinks she's seeing a ghost or.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that Andy was having a rough time in this episode and she was clearly triggered by everything that was happening. She's still not over Tim and her family life is a mess. So I thought it was just like the personification of this grief. It's alive. It's created this like tulpa that she's seeing in her head.
In the mirror, Abby is wearing, like, the ghost or the image of Abby. She's wearing what she's wearing in the picture at the funeral. Like, the picture they have of her up at the funeral is, like, what she's wearing
in
the mirror. Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Yep.
That's cool.
So, had I noticed that, I probably would have immediately thought this is some kind of hallucination.
Yeah.
It would been pretty cool if they actually did make it paranormal.
I agree.
Would have been, yeah. That would have been cool.
I wish that they gave us like a Dutch angle slow zoom and then everything kind of like got all washy.
I think if it were a different character, obviously it would be like a more paranormal thing, but it's Andy that's seeing her. So that to Andy's character, it's...
Mulder and Scully walk in.
Yeah.
Everyone knows ghosts don't exist, Mulder. We're about to find out.
I feel like... that moment is the first time where I know we had talked about this. We really hope that Andy doesn't end up getting used as this like cuckoo bananas character. And then that moment happened. Like I said, I immediately felt like vindicated. And then I thought, what else could it be? And then I just got scared and sad.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh no, what could this possibly mean? We're going on a crazy train, as Ozzy Osbourne would say. Pretty sure that's what he said.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get there next episode.
Yes, I believe we will.
Cuckoo bananas for sure. Not great. I want to talk about Grams.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on with Grams here. And I guess like for this episode being as triggering as it is for Jen and Andy's characters, this episode was triggering for me in a way because I've lost a bunch of friends and listeners know if you've paid attention that I grew up like in a very tightly evangelical household and like everything was like it was a bubble. Like everything I knew was fucking Christianity. It fucking sucked. But this whole reaction to Jen in her crisis of faith is the reaction from Grams is so mean-spirited in this thing of like, well, how can you cross my ideology and my beliefs? And Jen has that great quote where she was like, I'm not looking for your forgiveness, Grams. I'm looking for your understanding. And that's something that you've never been able to provide. And I know what that experience is like too, because all Grams knows is Christianity and the use of prayer to make things better. And she's never actually consoling Jen with what she needs. And not once in this entire episode does Grams ever actually say like, oh, I'm so sorry. What can I do to provide you with support?
Right.
Instead, it's a bunch of bullshit. So of course, Jen is going to react the way she did. And I thought it was a very human, I don't want to call it a performance of Jen, because it just, I don't know, struck a chord, and I thought it was like a pretty real kind of thing that happened. Man, I ran out of my ADHD meds. My brain is working half time.
I agree. And I think, not that your brain is working half time, I agree with the point you're making. I agree that this, it felt like a very, I don't know, like weirdly real episode. Mm-hmm. Like I too have lost a lot of friends, or maybe not a lot, but I've lost friends in my life. And I've also lost complicated individuals who maybe weren't great people, but you know, meant something to me, or it meant something to others. And I really liked the message that this episode was trying to provide, and what Jen was saying in the bathroom with Abby, where she was basically like, we owe it to her to at least honor her as she was and not pretend like she was something else.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
And that resonated with my high school experience, because I remember there was this kid who, honestly, everybody bullied. Nobody liked, like, he ended up taking his own life. Sorry, trigger warning. I should put that before there. But that ended up happening. And to watch the school then go through the motions and put up all these signs and posters about how much they love this kid and how he'll never be forgotten. He'll be missed. And it's like, you motherfuckers are the ones who did this. Like, whether you want to believe it or not, like, you contributed to this problem. And it was sickening. And I thought Jen, kind of being the person that was effectively the closest to Abby and had a very complicated relationship with her, but was still able to kind of see it. I don't know. I really loved it. And I also thought it was interesting to have Grams have that reaction too, the fully self-centered reaction.
It was really refreshing. And I think it's like, it's not just Jen or Grams. I think everyone is really well written in this episode to who they are, as like who the core of their character is. And everyone reacts accordingly in a very realistic way. Like, I love that Dawson is who Dawson is. And he's just like, you know what? Abby kind of sucked. Like, I'm going to just like, I don't care that much. Right. And Pacey, it was cool also, like, cause like, I feel like the last several episodes we've been seeing Pacey the hero. Like, that's like his new archetype. And I loved his version of trying to comfort Andy was like, this, like, she was kind of a fucking monster. Like, let me remind you of that. And she was also very honest and being like, don't tell me how to feel, which is also cool. Like, you're like actually seeing these, it felt really grounded and real. And I really liked it.
Yeah. Going off of that, I loved that moment where Andy was like, don't tell me how to feel. And he's like, you're right. I don't want to tell you how to feel. I just want to remind you, blah, blah, blah. That I feel like that was like a very like, healthy, like an example of healthy communication and relationships, which I don't think we see too much of. But also later, Andy naming their role, she's like, I don't want you to always feel like I'm the helpless lunatic and you have to rescue me and you like be the hero. And ultimately, I feel like Andy ends up being the hero because she gives this like eulogy and comforts Jen. So I thought that was like my favorite part of this episode was Andy ended up being like the true hero.
Yeah.
And I wonder, like, she has a very specific line saying to Pacey, don't let our roles be permanently etched in stone. And I wonder if that's also the writers being pretty clear too, that like, oh, we've kind of like, we have written ourselves in a corner before. And so we need to like be, because human beings are complex. They're not just Pacey the hero, Andy the cuckoo banana. It's way more complex than that. So it feels like they're, yeah, this is good. Like, we're on a good trajectory of characters being complex, very human individuals that experience grief in very different ways. And it was really cool to see that happen.
I thought the grief counselor was beyond useless. Like, and also, I don't know, there's something that was weirdly offensive about the way that she like pointed the finger at Jen and was like, Jen, you're were close. Abby's friend. Yes. How are you feeling right now?
You failed to keep her from drowning.
Yeah.
How's it going?
What the fuck?
I also like, I don't know what's more offensive, her being a terrible grief counselor or her outfit being the most stereotypical grief counselor thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, I feel like that scene was just put in there because it's like, oh, we have to show this. They're in high school. Let's show this like moment where they get a grief counselor. But
I love that the student council girl is like, and the
the ribbons.
Find a yellow ribbon at the table and blah, 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 or whatever. Yeah. It's just like, of course, any fucking opera. These politicians, man, drain the swamp. I thought that was an interesting little like way to start the episode off and felt very abrupt, you know, like we didn't really see anybody process what happened. We didn't see any real fallout. And then in school the next day, they're like, everybody, we need to work through the trauma. Now.
Yeah. I mean, that cold open was really intense.
Oh, it was really good.
That was spooky, actually.
That fucked me up.
Yeah.
They did that really cool. I feel like, the cinematography in this episode is also pretty interesting, but I think that shot that revolves around Jen as she's explaining it. Yeah. So it's like it starts at the back of her head and like comes to the front was really cool. And she's the only person that's illuminated really in the room while so she's foregrounded. And then in the background, you have Dawson and Joey. And it's like a really eerie, cool shot.
Yeah.
It really set the tone, I feel like, for the episode.
And what a juxtaposition, because they were going to fuck so hard.
I know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and also, like, I love that that might be the first time they went up the ladder together.
Yeah.
There's so much symbolism there.
That was my one of my questions for y'all is, do we think they would have had sex? Because this felt like the most believable, intimate exchange between the two of them. They were like really making out, and I was like, oh, they are gonna have sex.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And climbing the ladder together, I've said it before and I'll say it again, that ladder is a phallic image. It is an erection. They're climbing that erection tower together. And
Erection Tower. Can that be the name of this podcast?
No, because it's my band name.
If anything, I'm surprised that we didn't get a shot of Jen kicking down the ladder to be the cock block too.
I wonder if this moment that we're talking about right now, right, they're coming into the room presumably to have sex, at the very least to like further their physical connection in bachelor speak, but and instead they get blocked by Jen. I wonder, is this some kind of foreshadowing that they're never going to be able to kind of consummate their relationship? There's always going to be something that kind of comes between them, because it feels like there has always been something that comes between them, whether it's their own life issues or whether it's something external from their life.
Yeah. And they actually point this out with their scene in the cafeteria. Dawson's like, why don't we just like put like what happened the other day, like aside for a moment, like this is weird. This thing that happened to Abby, you know, he kind of points that out, that like, this is coming between what happened, it was happening with us. So.
Yeah. Like we don't, let's forget about that for now.
Yeah.
I wish that that's where they then put on fedoras and we got black and white and it was like, okay, Gumshoe, we got to go to the scene of the crime. This is weird. Abby shouldn't be dead. And see,
I'm because like death is so clearly the theme of this entire episode, and you also have Mommy Meat, who is getting maybe getting that job in Philadelphia, and it's like that's the death of the nuclear family, like death. And I'm one, like, is this also trying to spell out that like Dawson and Joey cannot ever consummate, because like this is a relationship that's dead. They're like dragging past its expiration date. I mean, they've already tried to make this work once before and it didn't work. And it's also we're still dealing with Joey dealing with some of the same shit of being like, I want to be out of Dawson's shadow. So what the fuck are you doing in this relationship
still? And also I think, you know, to the point that we're making and discussing right now, when Joey brings up her trauma with her mother's death, what is Dawson? He's like, what do we got to do to get you past this? It's been long enough.
Like, what's up with that?
Like, come on.
Shaming Joey. Fuck.
I got a hard on. Can we please stop talking about death?
God, my pee-pee.
Well, he definitely calls it a pee-pee. That's for sure.
Mr. Peanut.
I still have those photoshops of Dawson's
you do.
Dawson's hair on a dick. Anyone wants to see that, DM us.
I took note of this, but I tried to like think about it and couldn't really get anywhere, so I wanted to see what y'all thought.
Workshop it.
There are multiple times where Dawson references Wizard of Oz and refers to Abby
the
being
flying
the
monkeys and stuff.
And so I was just like trying to like think about the story of Wizard of Oz and connect it. And I really couldn't, but I was like, this seems pointed that he's making multiple Wizard of Oz references.
Yeah. I mean,
well, referencing like the evil characters in Wizard of Oz. So the flying monkeys, the witch.
Yeah.
But also to your point, is there something bigger than that? Is it also, is it kind of, if we think of the hero's journey?
Absolutely.
Is this the, you know, the trial by fire or whatever, where they go to the dark place and they go, you know, because the Wizard of Oz is basically that. They go to a foreign land, they undergo an adventure, they come back changed. Is this the change or the adventure that they're going on together? Or at least I think Jen and Abby are going through this.
Yeah, it's a very, like Wizard of Oz is a very common motif in like all like film and television, just to bring attention to the idea of storytelling. That's why Lynch is fucking obsessed with it, because all of his movies are deconstructing storytelling. And you'll see it very reflected here too, because this is like Dawson's Creek is as Wizard of Oz as you can get, because the story is about Dawson being challenged about like his worldview. That's the story that we're following. And
the creek is the yellow brick road.
The creek is the yellow brick road. His journey on realizing that he will not be the next Martin Scorsese, I think, is like his yellow brick road. And I think
so. Who's the man behind the curtain?
I wonder, like, who, like,
who's the wizard?
Yeah, like if you look at the Wizard of Oz in this, and like who is like the orchestrator of the dream? But his dream is to be a, like a filmmaker one day, to like make it.
Kind of feels like he's the man behind the curtain, because he's constructing this fantasy that, I mean, at least from my perspective, he's constructing this fantasy that he can be a successful filmmaker. Right now, we've seen really no evidence to that. And, and in fact, the only evidence we've had is he won an award for a bad movie and then got immediately ripped apart for another bad movie.
Yeah, if anything, Nicole Kennedy is like the Wicked Witch.
Yeah, or is she Glenda the Good Witch? Because she's trying to speak honest, truth.
Yeah.
I think Andy's Glenda.
In this episode, 100%. That poor Andy, though. I mean, let's talk about, they're at the Malia's Market, right?
Yep, Malia's Market.
Love that we're getting back
there. Yeah.
And what were they like eating dinner? What were they doing? I'm trying to remember.
Lunch or something. I think it was in the middle of the day. And or maybe it was, I don't know.
Grieving mommy, mommy Morgan comes in.
Oh my gosh.
And she's like, you are my daughter's friend, right? Save me, please. What in the fuck? I mean, just because you drove her home one day?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It seems like such, I mean,
it's a reach. It's such a huge reach.
And it's such a burden to saddle on Abby. Sorry.
Andy.
All these acres.
I know.
Yeah. So like, you wouldn't, there has to be like more formality and organizing a funeral than just like,
I ran into
hey,
you.
You're a kid that hung out with my daughter once.
Well, okay. I mean, but to be fair, it sounds like Abby didn't have a lot of friends and mom is disconnected from her kid's life.
Family.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. And not only family, what about those girls that were at the party with her when she was like, what the fuck? Yeah. Where are they? Yeah. They weren't even at the fucking, what funeral? Is it called? Funeral. Thank you. I was like, wake, no. What about that?
Or just like shows that like her mom didn't know her and she didn't have a relationship with her, you know, with her parents.
What
I don't
was
know.
That quote that she had in her diary about her mom? She's like,
fat slut or
something. Yeah, she's, no, I lost it. But she said something about like, how can I share DNA with this?
Whatever.
Like, I hate my mom so
much, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. How can I share DNA with her? It's like, damn, Abby, like, your mom, you hated your mom from what you wrote. So I could see it being just a very like surface level relationship that she has. So who, in that case, who would she turn to? Probably the one person she saw.
Remembers?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's so strange. It's a stretch. I mean, we're like, they're forcing us to like make it a stretch because it's not that great of writing. That's like probably the biggest misstep in this episode.
I would agree.
It's pretty random.
I mean, it just like, it seemed like Jen, and Abby in general hung out a lot more. I feel like her mom would have met her at some point, but.
But then again, I wonder if like the only connection she has is like, oh, that girl that my daughter gets drunk with a lot.
Yeah.
And she may, I wonder, does she know that Abby was with Jen the night she died and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Which if she does, I wonder how she feels that Jen is then at the funeral and says all that shit. Like, I mean, look, I actually think her speech is like super powerful. Wrong place, wrong time, but like I think her speech is powerful. But I think regardless of whether or not Abby's mom knows that, I would still be like, what the fuck
exactly,
are you
doing?
Like, this is not the place, lady. Fuck.
A random thing I noticed when Andy goes in to go look through her Abby's things, Abby's leopard outfit that she wore in like a previous episode was like laid out on the bed.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, yeah. Interesting. That's a good detail.
Yeah.
I liked that.
You also notice you can see the boom mic in the reflection
of. Oh, yeah. I did.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah. What an interesting and weird episode. I mean, I feel like I was hoping we would get more from Jack in this episode because I feel like he's often like the voice of reason, or he's so emotionally aware. And I tried to count. I think he was only in like two
one
moments.
Scene, but I want to talk about that scene.
Yeah, tell me.
Okay, so this is directly in the middle of the episode. If you look at the timing, it's like a 40-minute episode, right? And this is at 20 minutes-ish. And it's a scene with Jack and Joey. And it's actually, to me, it was a little bit of like a comedic relief moment in between this like really heavy episode. He asks Joey about Dawson because he noticed they're kissing at the wedding, and they kind of are like laughing about it, I think. And then they say like they're talking about like the weirdness of Abby's death, and then Joey says at least she went out with a bang.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it was just like a cute like just like friend. It shows like that their friendship is developing in like a way beyond what their relationship was before, and also was like a nice just like relief moment.
Yeah.
So I thought it was like powerful, even though it was very brief.
Yeah. This episode does have something that I really like, and it's kind of what I've always wanted out of the show is just like showing genuine friendships.
Yeah.
I really liked the sequence too, like near the end where Dawson is editing his film and Pacey comes in and they just have a conversation. And for once, it's not a fucking conversation about like, do you think Joey will kiss me?
Right. And,
it's like authentic, and they're talking about Abby, and it's like, it just feels real and lived in and just friends being friends. Mm. There's an authenticity here that I wish was everywhere.
Yeah.
I really liked that scene too, with him just kind of watching those scenes of Abby. And I mean, I know that he kind of like earlier in this episode, or maybe his last episode, is like, I'm going to re-edit my film to make it good.
Yeah.
So potentially there's like that motivation behind it. But I like to think that Dawson is like, he's trying to process this grief and trauma, and he doesn't really realize that he's doing it. Mm-hmm. And he just finds himself watching Abby's footage and can't help but be like, she's her, you know, like she can't help but be her. Look at this scene where she's making fun of Devin for having food in her teeth. Like, you know, like I thought it was kind of, I don't know, it was kind of heartwarming in a weird way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was cool.
I also, that scene with Jack and Joey is when Jack says something like how he realizes that he was probably the last person that she kissed.
Yes. And that was why she said, at least shoot out with a bang.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was about how Jack was the last person to have a kiss. So I thought it was like a funny, like little, it was like the most light scene in that, that episode. And I thought it was cute.
Also, the most important thing out of this entire episode that I'm just so happy about is Abby's mom is played by Michelle Scarabelli, who played Lieutenant Jenna DeSora in an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, where her character is romantically and sexually interested in Data.
Oh,
wow.
And they go on a couple dates.
Wow. I want to just watch those.
Yeah, I want to watch those dates.
Got to watch that episode. It's pretty crazy.
Miss Scarabelli, I think I would like to take you to the ship's holodeck. Yes. There we go.
It's a lot of that and her being like, oh, Data, you're so funny.
I love your gray skin and yellow eyes. Well, should we take our very first break? I think it's time.
Yes, indeed.
We should go listen to some Weird Al.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be back.
Bye.
And we're back.
Something really clicked for me this episode that hadn't before. And I've, at least up until this point, I've noticed that Joey has a pretty hard time expressing herself in general. And she's always finding herself in like miscommunication and things like that. And there's got to be a root to that. And I thought it was pretty interesting that this episode had a very big scene with her and her dad talking about their mom's death.
Yeah.
And Joey's dad does say, like, they, you know, we've never really talked about your mother's death. And so, what the fuck do you mean? Your mom dies and then he's just like...
Well, he went to prison right away.
I know, that's but there's like... I mean, that's like so clear why Joey has such a hard time like understanding her own emotions and being able to express them and understand other people's emotions. And it's like, oh, there it is. Like, that's so the root of that, it feels like.
Yeah, I'm just realizing how like... there's been this emphasis about how Andy needs to go to therapy. But what about Joey? I feel like Joey should be in therapy.
All these definitely, characters definitely need to be in therapy. But another thing too that I... all of them. One thing I didn't really understand though, because we've talked about the cinematography in this episode being pretty solid. And one thing is that at the end of that sequence where they're having that conversation, Joey gets up to leave and the shot is coming from inside and you get the door frame, and through the door frame you just have Joey's dad by himself. So it's like clearly he's boxed in, but I don't really know what that image is trying to tell the audience.
Oh, he's still in prison?
Definitely in an emotional prison.
He's in an emotional prison. That might be something. And
I took it because the way that I interpreted that is he is trying to connect with Joey. And he's successful initially, right? Like he goes out there and they're talking. And then as soon as he tries to broach the subject of his wife, her mother's death, she kind of brushes him off and is like, I gotta go, I gotta leave. Mm-hmm. And then we get that framing shot, like he's being put in a box. And to me, it was like, Joey is putting him in a box and not allowing him to actually grow into the father that he wants to be, maybe the person he wants to be, or the father that she needs, because of whatever reason, right? We don't know why she is unwilling to speak about it, but that was my, did you guys feel like she kind of brushed him off in that moment?
Definitely. Yeah. She didn't want to have that conversation at all.
Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, she did say, I have to go to school. So like, yeah, maybe we don't have this conversation when you're about to go to school after your friend, well, a girl in your class died. Maybe that's not the time.
Clearly uncomfortable too.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know. I don't necessarily think that's right, but that's just the thing that's the only way I could make sense.
I mean, it's a pretty good read. That's how she treats all of her relationships. This is who you are, and I'm not going to let you like ever break out of that box. Exactly.
Except Jack.
Except for Jack, yeah.
You know, I feel like we have everyone kind of grappling with death in this episode, but specifically Joey, Andy, and Jen. And I liked seeing their, like, the different, it's like they're all kind of like maybe in different stages of like going through the grief process. And I really liked seeing that reflected. You know, Joey kind of vocalizing how it's like she feels like her mom is kind of like slipping away and she can't remember like, you know, her laugh or her smile. And I don't know. I just, you know, grief is so complex for everyone. And I just liked seeing, it felt very relatable seeing these characters also kind of have like being like reflecting these different feelings.
Everyone's on their own very specific journey.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's can be hard to capture.
Yeah, no, they did a really good job. And it's really cool that... I forgot what I was fucking saying. If anyone has Ritalin out there, please, God.
I wanted to mention something that Pacey said, which was, he said that Abby was, quote, one of the most hideous creatures to haunt the streets of Capeside.
Aunt.
And he's telling Andy that she shouldn't be so hard on herself or feel guilty about what happened, right? That she kicked them out of the wedding and all that stuff, you know, because Andy's kind of like blaming herself about it. And first of all, haunt, so she's a spooky specter. second of all, wow, that is like really harsh. I mean, I know like, you know, she was a bad person, whatever we want to say, but like, damn, like she just fucking died, dude. Like, can we soften that a little bit? I don't know.
You know what? No. I think, I mean, I like, you know.
I guess that does undercut the whole point of the episode, which is to honor her as she was.
Yeah. Well,
PC, and be authentic with your own emotions.
Pacey is a character of someone that tells it like it is. Yeah. Like, that's who he is. But also, like, I've been in the same boat. I worked with this guy who's a lot older than me, and he was so cruel to me. He would scream at me all the time at work. He would call me gay slurs, just like made my life a living hell. And then he fucking died of cancer. And my reaction, yeah, good fucking riddance. Yeah. Rest in piss, asshole. Like, he was a sexist, racist, misogynistic pile of shit. And I fucking hated him, and I'm glad he's dead.
Right.
So I know exactly where Pacey's coming from.
And yeah. I guess in to Pacey, like, he just watched this person, Abby, publicly humiliate mm-hmm. his girlfriend over things she has no control over, mm-hmm. i.e. her mother's mental health
and her mental health.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Her own mental health in front of the entire school and get joy out of it. So like, you know what? She kind of was a fucking monster and she never redeemed herself to anybody.
Yeah. It's
There's always an ulterior motive.
Yeah. And the only window that we ever got into the real Abby, quote unquote, if you even want to call it that, is when she had that kind of like, little brief glimpse of that, just like the real her telling Jen right before she died, like, I don't think I'll ever be happy.
Right.
And it's like, oh, like there is a person in there, but then immediately backtracks a little bit and then fucking dies. So we'll never know the true Abby Morgan. And yeah, all will, you know, actions speak louder than words, and she was a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it, that also kind of like, this episode adds to like the, that whole kind of like sadness of like not really knowing her and her being very like isolated with her mom being like, yeah, I don't know who her friends are. I can't find anyone to speak at her funeral. Like, and then for Jen to give that
whopper of a speech.
Quote eulogy.
I mean, it's also interesting that Andy, it seems like Andy was probably the one that Abby was like the meanest to, yet Andy is also the one that takes the high road in that, at that funeral, in the eulogy. And yeah, I thought that was interesting. Also, like at the funeral, the way that they framed Andy compared to how they framed Jen, like I think if you look at how the camera was on Jen, you can only see her up close. But with Andy, they pulled the camera back and she's almost like it's lit up.
Right.
On the pedestal with the light over her.
They're making her look very angelic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird setup. I mean, I don't go to church. Sorry. I guess spoiler alert for my life, but I've never seen a church that had like this weird little spiral staircase to a raised little, spot to just, was it a pulpit? Is that what a pulpit is? Like, I don't know.
I mean, I was raised evangelical, non-denominational, so we didn't have that. We just had a really cool looking pastor with with like one of those like wearable like head mics.
Nice.
Yeah, really sick, so he can like wave his hands around telling you that you're gonna go to hell for thinking about sex. But I believe in Catholicism, like at a Catholic pulpit, like that's how it is. Like it's like set off to the side and it's like raised.
I'm actually thinking, when we were in Italy, I remember we went to one of those cathedrals, and I remember noting that there was the, you know, I'm guessing it's what's called the altar at the very end, where, you know, they've got everything up front. But then in the middle of like the big seating area, what was like 100 feet back, there was this little spiral staircase to a raised area. And I remember thinking like, what the fuck is that for? Because it would be behind the people who are like looking at the altar. But maybe that's like a used, you know, Catholics, I was just going to say, write in. I don't actually really care about this, but it's just an interesting little thing. And I was wondering if that was like a real thing, or if that was just something they created for dramatic effect in this scene to make Abby rise above.
I bet Catholics that are actually listening to this are probably just like screaming.
Yeah,
whether or not it is, they framed Jen differently than they framed Andy. They pulled the camera back. So I think that was intentional. Whether or not they like created that pulpit or whatever it is.
You know what it's actually for? It's for the two old Muppets.
Totally.
Marley.
Shout out to Gavin.
To Gavin, yeah.
And that's from Scrooged.
Yes.
Yeah, I Googled Catholic pulpit. It is that spiral.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Spiral boy.
Hey, it's so cute. It's kinda cute. It looks like a little treehouse.
It does. Yeah. I want to hang out up there. Except for having to be in a Catholic church, but
should we touch on Jen getting the boot out of Graham's house?
Oh yeah, we gotta talk about that. Fucked up and weird.
It's so fucking selfish, man. I hate Grams for
this. It doesn't seem very believable that Grams would do this, but it was
not at all.
Interesting, like earlier in the episode, they kind of like tease it because Jen's like, well, maybe I should just move out.
Right.
And it's like, that seemed like so out of left field. And it's like, what? Like, that didn't really feel like it made sense. And then it was Graham's like packing up her stuff. It's like, okay.
Jen is like, she's on a self-destructive streak, right? She's spiraling and she is like lashing out of the world. As we find out, it's because she feels guilty over what happened, because that's what she says to Andy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I took this out on you and I yelled at you when I, that was this episode, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, good. that she yelled at her and is like, I am realizing it's because I feel responsible for this. It wasn't fair of me to say it's your fault for kicking us out, blah, 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 right? So she's doing the self-destructive stuff. Graham should know better, as being literally her last hope and resort. Like, she got shipped here because her parents don't want to deal with her problems anymore. Graham's is supposed to be the one taking care of her and like helping her through this. And yeah, they've had some frictions and stuff, but to your point, Cody, like, she never once really tries to meet her where she's at. And instead, at the first, I mean, it's not the first, that's hyperbole, but really at the first big blow up between them, she's packing up all her shit.
Exactly.
And then it's yeah. like, get the fuck out of here.
It's what?
And right after they were like, just, I feel like they were just beginning to kind of like
yeah.
make amends and like kind of, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
like
we had become that episode where like
Jen
like did her makeover.
Yeah. And she was also like defending Jen and like her, you know,
right,
accepting Jack or whatever. Yeah. A little bit, but just is or such
rejecting
a
rejecting
time. Yeah. It just seemed so.
If this is like odd. The most, this is the, as Christian as it gets,
yeah,
right? There's no
totally.
Christian hate like Christian love. And this is the whole thing. Like, Graham's mm-hmm. perspective in this whole scenario is like, well, I'll have Jen come and stay with me and I'll turn her into a good Christian girl. And at the first stance of Jen actually like standing up and saying like, no, Christianity is not the fucking answer. I'm dealing with something really emotionally traumatizing and mm-hmm. Praying isn't going to help. God isn't going to help. Like, you need to like talk to me like a fucking human. And of course, the first thing is like, get out of my house. Like,
right.
It's the first yeah. reaction that like you get in reality. Unfortunately, a lot mm-hmm. of people will kick family members out of their fucking house and reject yeah. them for being different or
very
not
true.
Being their religion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I guess I understand that. It just seems like there's been other times where Jen has been very
right.
Like clearly blatantly, like, I'm not into God. I'm not into
right.
prayer. I'm
yeah.
not about this.
She's
Graham's.
Said that she's an atheist in
yeah.
the past.
Yeah. So it just,
well, she took it as humiliation. And of
yeah.
course, like
yeah.
she's such a self-centered character mm-hmm. that she believes that speech was aimed at her at this event, the funeral.
Right.
And that's why she takes it so personally. She's like, well, you did it because I was there. It's like,
right.
it's not fucking all about you, Grams, even though a little bit is about you,
yeah.
but
for sure.
it's not all about you.
I feel like it would have been made more sense if like we know, well, we'll talk about it next episode, but like it would have made more sense if Graham was like, I organized a place, I, you know, figured out a place where you can stay because you need to like live somewhere
yes.
else, not just like, I'm kicking you out.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah. I'm glad
I've arranged for you to move here.
Right. I'm glad that we didn't. part of me wishes that we saw Graham's go over and talk with Gail and be like, Jennifer needs a place to stay. And
yeah.
Gail's like, well, of course she can stay here. But part of me isn't.
Well, not
that
even
we,
that specific, you know,
sure.
just like, yeah, I don't know.
I'm
yeah.
just saying that would be the easiest
yeah.
option
yeah.
is what happened.
Right.
I'm glad that we didn't get that though, because then we got the amazing reveal of her being in the bedroom and being like, whoa, what the fuck? You know, all that stuff happens.
Wait,
so,
that was this episode.
Yeah, no.
Oh, in the bedroom. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess we don't know where she's.
Yeah.
Where,
yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I take
you know
that
what
back.
I'm saying?
Yes,
yeah,
I do
yeah,
know
yeah,
what you're
yeah,
saying.
Yeah. I'm.
Who's on first?
We get the reveal next episode where she goes.
Yes.
But it could.
We're going to cut
yeah.
this shit out. So
living in Mitch's apartment.
Yeah, I was trying. Never mind. I was trying to make a point, but I think I got.
No, I hear your point, right? That Graham, I think it would elevate Graham's character to have
the complexity
her,
of her character where she's like kicking her out, but she still has this like
compassion.
Yeah.
A little bit. I mean, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
You will not be living under this roof
right.
if you're going to be talking that way to me.
Yeah.
But I will make sure that you can live somewhere where you can. Blah, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah, blah,
sure.
Blah, blah.
Sure. I mean,
I've
yeah.
talked to Sister Eustace Grace. And
yeah.
Eustace Grace.
I think I was talking. Sorry. I don't know. I'm sorry. This isn't important.
it
I was,
sounds like it.
during our commercial break, I was telling everyone that. I was watching an old Law and Order and Abby was in an episode and Grams was also in an episode.
Weird.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And she didn't have her accent and it was so fun.
Oh, funny.
I wish she didn't have her accent in this show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was talking like Jar Jar Binks.
Misa didn't kill her.
Also, real quick, I feel like we need to talk about Gail potentially
Philly.
Moving
Garcia.
To
yeah.
Philly. the idea that she got a fucking award for her
oh my god
piece
dude.
On the
oh
girls talking about what it's like being a teenager is so comical. Yeah,
makes me think the Massachusetts media is starved for something. Yes. If that's winning awards, yeah.
Dawson's film gets an award, and then yeah. Gail's awful piece on teenage girl life gets an award, and we saw that it was not good. They weren't talking really about anything.
So bad.
And also, wasn't that like Jen's school? Oh, no. Jen was involved.
Helping. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to say, wasn't that Jen's project? So did Gail just fucking take responsibility
for
that?
Yeah, I thought it turned out it was her idea. It was Jen's idea.
It was Jen's idea. God damn it, Gail. Gosh.
But I wonder if Gail will be written out.
That's what I was wondering. Is this kind of like, you know, either she just let production know, hey, I got cast. Like, I haven't looked at her IMDb. I just got cast in a movie. I just got cast in a show. I'm going to need to be elsewhere for next cycle. Mm. Or were they like just writing her out for their own reasons? I'm curious.
I'm super curious too. It's a pretty good narrative device to force an ultimatum.
For sure. Mm.
For sure. But.
Was she asking for a raise and they're like, you know what? We think you might go to Philadelphia.
Wait, also though, I think one of us, maybe Mal sent this to our group chat, but Jonathan Vanderbeek posted for his for like his birthday Gail, the actress that plays Gail,
Mary Margaret Humes,
sends him cookies every year for his birthday.
So sweet.
Every year.
So
nice.
Yeah, sweet.
I think that's adorable. I was like,
this is the best TV mom ever.
Yeah, I think that's. I don't know. I mean. I'm sure the other shows have this same sense of camaraderie, but it is really cute to see that like Mary Margaret Humes and Jonathan Vanderbeek and Daddy Man Meat and Mary Margaret Humes, they're all like close. Yeah. And you know, every John Wesley Shipp, that's Mr. Man Meat, every like Instagram post that he makes, she comments on and he's always tagging her and like reposting like things that show the two of them. So it's like, I love that they're all so close because that's what I would imagine. That's how the show feels, right? Like it feels like they're all kind of like a big family. And it's nice to see that kind of is the case for at least some of them. Like
for most of them. But one thing I did read, and this isn't a spoiler or anything, but I forgot where I read it, but I saw that James Vanderbeek and who plays Pacey? What's that guy's name?
Joshua Jackson.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes.
I was going to say Jonathan Jackson.
Jonathan Vanderbeek and Jonathan Jackson. Name. But
cut that out.
I guess those guys fucking hated each other.
Oh, no.
Really?
Wait, what?
Yeah, and I guess that they both...
Wait, which one? Sorry.
Pacey and Dawson.
Oh.
Interesting.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Fans of the show that are like listening to our podcast, please write us and tell us if this is true or not. I don't know where I read this, but I read that they hated each other so much that they would like beg writers to keep them in separate sequences because they hated being around each other.
Whoa.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like they both had like very different methods of acting that annoyed each other.
Interesting.
I can so see that.
Just like really
very interesting.
Grinded each other's gears.
I was going to say, I wonder if they're following each other on Instagram, but I don't think Joshua Jackson's on there.
I don't think he is. Interesting, because, you know, like, I just thought that was, like, maybe the way that they were written, but it does, they have such different personalities, and it feels authentic to who they are as people, right? Like, I don't think James Vanderbeek is really acting all that much when he's being Dawson. I don't think Joshua Jackson is really acting all that much when he's being Pacey. It feels like they cast because they could naturally be these people. Yes. And when I'm watching them, I'm like, these people would never be friends in real life. Like, these characters, these personalities are so different to each other. So that's interesting to hear that they probably did really. I mean, it seems like they hated each other.
Yeah. We don't really see them interact that much either.
It's this one scene. I mean, they did a really great job in the scene that they were given in this episode where they, you know, were pretending to be friends. But yeah, I wonder if it's like every once in a while we have to have a scene where you two guys have to like interact. It's for the show. Yeah. It is sad. It is sad though. I remember like you always want that for your favorite shows. I remember, Julia Louis-Dreyfus was on Pete Holmes's podcast and it was either that or Marc Maron. Either way, they were just like, oh, like, do you and Jerry hang out? And she goes, nope. It's like, oh, okay.
Moving on.
Yeah, I think like the Buffy cast is the same way too. I think like they all are just like, we don't really like each other.
It's a lot of time to spend with people.
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, they're just coworkers and you don't always.
And then there's also probably like, you know, the varying pay rates and scales that people are getting. That's going to drive a wedge in them. Call times are different for people. And
they're not always in the same scenes. So it's sometimes they just don't see each other that often.
I just was watching this season, this most recent season of Drive to Survive, which was an early recommendation from one of us. But this most recent season, there's some big drama in the Formula One world. Lewis Hamilton is changing teams, and they're kind of trying to show this tension before it happened when they were filming it. And they're showing this Mercedes promotional event, and Lewis is like, oh, yeah, I got here at 4:30. And he goes to his teammate, and he says, what time did you get here? And he said, oh, I didn't even have to show up until after 10. And Lewis is a 7-time world champion in Formula One, like one of the most – he is like the best Formula One driver aside from Max Verstappen right now. And Lewis is like – what the fuck? Why did I have to be here at fucking 4:30 in the morning and this guy who's been on the team for 2 years gets to be here at 10? You know, he's like throwing a little bit of a temper tantrum. I can only imagine shit like that happening every single time on this show. Mm-hmm. And especially when Dawson is in like every fucking scene, he's probably getting preferential treatment and a lot of shit.
That's what I've heard about like Sarah Michelle Gellar and Buffy. It's like she had to be in every, like her schedule was so horrible. It was like 20 hours of shooting every single day. And so the rest of the Scooby gang, they only have to shoot for like 10 or 12 hours a day. Right. So it's like when you have that happening constantly, I guarantee Joshua Jackson, who's cool as a cucumber, walks onto set and he's just like, hey, what's up? And everyone loves him. And and then Jonathan Vanderbeek starts, losing his fucking mind.
Having a bad day. Yeah. And then he's being snappy at everybody. And then he's feeling guilty about being snappy while Joshua Jackson is like, like you're saying, cool. Everybody's like, wow, you're so cool. Do you want to do another Got Milk ad?
Damn, yeah. Get this man some milk.
Well, is that all we have to say on this episode?
I got one last thing.
Do it.
The only version of this episode that I watched is the one that was streaming on Amazon Prime. Sure. It's not the original music, but I noticed that there was a lot of like pop punk music and it felt really inappropriate. Like what a strange music choice for an episode that is pretty dour and sad. Hmm. You'd think that they'd throw in, I don't know, like Elliott Smith or something.
Right.
But make it feel, I don't know, a little more sad. But this is just like, like what they're just like going from scene to scene. It's like, I don't know if that really works. Well, it doesn't reflect it. I don't know. I should go back and look what the real version was.
Yeah, I'm curious what the actual song list was.
I wouldn't be surprised if whoever the music supervisor was for this episode was just like, what do kids like angsty music, right? Like punk stuff, right? And they're like, yeah, sure, whatever. And he's like, okay, cool, let's go get that.
Well, that is some punk ass shit right there. Yeah, I wish they were playing just like the DC hardcore scenes. I wish they were playing like Black Flag.
I wish it was just Gigi Allen biting scum over and over again.
I have one other stray observation. I also feel like I'm about to sneeze.
Hell yeah.
Is that the observation?
Deep.
I noticed a lot of background characters wearing blue. Lots of blue. Water reflecting Abby's death.
I noticed that Dawson had a blue house with a blue window.
That's all. I just, it's a lot of blue. All right. Well, I think we've.
I'm blue. Da-ba-dee-da-ba-da. Okay. Well, I think it's time that we move on to ratings, Peak Creek moment of the week, and our recommendations. Who would like to go first?
Cody.
Okay. I'm giving this episode a 4. I thought everyone's reactions to Abby's death were par for the course, but still surprising in how their narratives culminated. I think killing a character off can be kind of jump the shark tacky, but here it allowed for some really great moments. I really like Jen's arc, Joey's journey, seeing how far Andy will go to be a people pleaser. I thought it was a strong ep with only a few bumps in the road. Peak Creek moment, Jen's speech, brutally honest, well-performed, accurate image of complex grief. Thought it was really great.
Great.
Peak Creek moment?
I just said it.
Oh,
Jen's speech.
Oh, God.
I think I
blacked out. Sorry.
Okay, I will also give this episode a 4. I thought the episode felt very dynamic with the characters, especially. It was paced well. I liked a lot of the different locations. We're getting more world building and also camera shots, a lot of kind of different camera shots, I feel like. And then the lighting provided and also the rainy weather. We didn't really talk about that, but like we don't get a lot of seasons in Dawson's Creek, but the rain really provided a good like background and match the moodiness to the episode.
Good atmosphere.
So, good atmosphere, yeah. And then my Peak Creek moment was Dawson enjoyed talking about the absurdity of Abby's death, how weird she was, and how they didn't like her. And I just love this quote. It was weird. Abby is weird. That she died is weird. The way she died is weird.
Yes.
That was a quote from Dawson. Good.
Really good. Really good delivery.
All right. I'm also going to give it a 4. I liked Andy being the hero in this episode, and I liked the accurate representation of grief.
Yeah.
Bow, bow, bow. My
is that really worth an air horn?
Yeah.
Grief.
Yeah. Give it up for grief, baby. My Pea Creek moment is Joey saying, "At least she went out with a bang."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good made one. Me chuckle. Also, love the use of the pan flute.
Yes. We were talking about that.
Oh, wait. Yeah.
They
do that again.
Feels like
episode.
Titanic.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
My heart will go on.
Yeah.
Gotta bring the pan flute back.
No, we don't. No. But it is humorous as hell. It made me. Anyway, yes. All right. My rating. I'm also giving this episode a 4. I think this might be the first time we've all been in complete agreement. Goodness.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I liked this episode for many of the same reasons. I thought there was a noticeable uptick in the like quality and general production and like shot composition. I feel like we're maybe getting like a little, they got like a funding bump or something. They ran to the end of the season. They realized they had a bunch more budget and they're just trying to use it. I don't know, but it felt good, looked good. I liked all the spooky references and I like that we're kind of getting more from Joey's dad than just like, I'm out of prison and,
yeah.
And Joey hates me and there's problems. Starting to humanize him. My Peak Creek moment of the week, I was going to say Jen's eulogy speech, but I remembered the moment where after the funeral, Joey is like, I gotta go somewhere. Dawson, can you come with me? And they go to Joey's mom's grave. I just thought that was like nice. A really sweet moment. We didn't really talk about that, but I thought it was really good to see Joey finally kind of trying to deal with her trauma, trying to get past it. And I don't know, in a kind of weird way, it was nice to see Dawson be a part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I forgot that in that moment, which was like very lovely, she brings flowers to her mom's grave that she took from Abby's funeral. That was funny.
It's very much like Royal Tenenbaums. Like, don't we have another body buried here?
All right. So recommendations this week. Ooh, actually, I am going to do a last minute audible and change my recommendation order. I am going to be recommending a vidyar game. It's called Balatro. It's been taking the gaming world by storm. It was a complete unexpected hit. I believe it's on just about every single console available. And I recently heard a rumor that the developer, it's a single person who developed the game, is going to be working on a mobile version as well. So you soon will be able to find it on your phone. Let me give you a quick summary of what Balatro is. It is a deck building roguelite game based on poker. So that sounds...
Oh, I saw this like on IGN or something. Yeah. Everyone's like losing their minds over it.
It's fucking crazy. So I know that probably sounds boring, especially if you don't like poker like me. I hate poker. It's boring as fuck. But in this game, you're trying to make hands like a pair of cards or two pair or four of a kind or whatever. And each hand you play gets you chips. Each round of the game, you're trying to reach a certain amount of chips. But where the game gets really interesting is at the end of every round of play, you go to a store where you can buy more cards for your decks or for your deck of cards. You can change the cards that are in your deck. You can buy jokers that completely change the way that your deck is working or scoring, gives you bonus chips, gives you multipliers. It's super, super fun. It's super, super deep. It's incredibly rewarding to play. And I just can't get enough of it. I'm terrified for when it comes to mobile devices because I'm worried I will do nothing but play Balatro. So Balatro, it's spelled Balatro. Go look it up.
Did you say, is it free?
It is not free. It's like
$15.
$15,
oh,
yeah.
Dang. Okay.
It's, and I can't stress this enough, made by one person. Like this dude killed it.
All right, I am going to recommend the TV show Abbott Elementary. I was late to get going on this show, but I've been binging it and just have a couple episodes left of the second season. I'm sure most people know about this show, but it is a mockumentary sitcom on ABC. The third season is currently airing. You can watch reruns on Hulu. It's a group of teachers at a school in Philadelphia where you kind of see the problems that they face as teachers, like not having enough funding and supplies and just like the different hardships they go through working with like an underfunded like community and population. But it's just really sweet. It's a really good feel-good show. The relationships between the teachers is really fun. I've loved it so much. I really wasn't sure if I was going to enjoy it. Because I was like, oh, just another one of these TV shows. But it's been so wonderful and couldn't recommend it enough.
It win a bunch of awards.
It won a bunch of awards. Yeah, created by Quinta Brunson, who stars in it, and she's so charming. All of them are so charming, and I just have like fallen in love with her specifically. She's so cute.
Awesome. Okay, I am going to recommend an Instagram page / I'm pretty sure this person's on TikTok and YouTube as well, but it's called Chef Reactions. I don't know if anyone's heard of this, but this page is run by a professional chef. He reposts other people's home cooking videos with a split screen of his deadpan reactions to what's happening.
Oh my god, it's so funny.
Makes me laugh so much. The videos are usually like really weird, made up, or like oddly executed recipes. And then sometimes he'll throw in like a really impressive like one that looks tasty and that's like really professionally done. But most of the time, they're really disgusting looking. And like for example, there's one that he does that's someone making, they start with a hollowed out cabbage with raw ground beef stuffed inside as like in the rim on the inside, then a huge block of cheese stuffed into the middle, then raw beef around the outside, the entire cabbage, then wrapped with bacon and then baked. And so like, he just like does this ridiculous commentary while they're doing this. And then he'll rate the recipes and then like says if he would try it or not. It's just hilarious. Like,
he's great. I recently saw one where somebody was doing a Super Bowl meal prep. A lot of the videos are like from like mommy blogger, mommy influencer types, you know? And you kind of know what you're getting when you start the videos. But it was like this fucking like 10-gallon tub that she filled
plastic tub.
Like five different huge party size bags of Doritos
and then like
pours
uncooked
a gallon of Velveeta cheese. And it's just like, this is fucking disgusting. And then she gets her husband to come in and try it. And he's like, tastes great, honey. It's like, no, fucking doesn't. That looks foul.
But I think he does like more stuff, not just that, but like more food stuff on YouTube. And I haven't really looked into that yet, but
he's hilarious.
He's funny. Yeah.
My rec this week is the new Waxahachie record, Tiger's Blood. It's the latest release from singer-songwriter Katie Crutchfield and continues her trajectory from her last couple of records of a kind of like Americana alt-country emo sound. I've been a fan of hers since her like early releases, and it's amazing how she continues to grow as a songwriter. For this one, she also brought on singer-songwriter and Wednesday guitarist MJ Lenderman, playing electric guitar in all the tracks as well as vocals in the song Right Back to It. It's a beautiful, fun record. It scratches a very specific itch of Americana music that I really vibe with. Love her so much. Go check it out.
It's good. Nice. Well, y'all, next time on Freaks and Creeks, we will be discussing season 2, episode 20, called Reunited, where Dawson and Joey's romantic dinner together is spoiled by his parents' presence. Pacey suspects Andy of seeing someone else.
Reunited and it feels so good. How many times do you think we're going to hear that song? A million?
I hope it just plays from the start and doesn't stop.
Yeah, exactly. I hope it's just, that's the only thing.
Hope it's like all the different covers throughout the whole episode of that song.
God, I hope we get a ska cover.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, and I can't see why you wouldn't, and please go ahead and subscribe to our show and join us as we continue to set sail through Dawson's Creek one episode at a time. If you want more of our wonderful content, go and visit our website, freaksandcreeks.com. Find us on Instagram at freaksandcreekspod. And please, fucking please, write us a fucking email!
Scared.
At show@freaksandcreeks.com. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.